So we have discussion just before the break, and we thought it might be easier if I just run through these or introduce them and do this straight through the resubmission rather than.
That might be even more confusing.
I'll just clarify that. Mr. Butts says it covers every one of the remaining submissions.
Yeah.
So he will just, rather than me introducing it, Mr. Butts will simply introduce it.
I see. Okay. Yeah.
So I'm just passing it up.
No, that's fine. I thought it was going to read through the whole lot in one
sentence. Oh, no. That's what I thought too.
Yeah. Can I just follow up on your last question regarding the and your comment about the policy. I recall with a rural residential zone that has this near relation to the standard zone, I do recall looking at whether it should be specific objectives for the camp held in the rural residential zone. I know that Bob Coe does that. I think it's a Ferry Hill, there's another rural residential zone that once again has specific provisions about housing blocks, but there's no objectives and policies. There's something that could be considered as if the zone is being carved, then there should be objectives and policies specific to that zone. They're going to depart from the standard provisions. So moving on to Barry Strange and Nick Clark, and also Glen Terry Heights. And although it's not ticked on the run sheet, one of my paragraphs in my summary list covers both of those categories of submission, Barry Strange and Nick Clark and Glen Terry Heights.
Yes.
So I was going to say, and they are sort of combined, but in the same area. So if I read my paragraph out, and then we'll ask Dr. Reed to read her summary for Strange and Clark submission.
Yes.
Okay, so my paragraph 7 of my summary. I say, in and around Wilson Bay and Hobbs Cove, a number of submissions requested replacing the range of provisions that are rural residential subzone, rural lifestyle, visitor accommodation subzone, ONL classification, SNAs, and the building descriptions with the rural residential zone in order to simplify the zoning and provide for greater development. So all of those submissions were asking for some elements of that change to a more simpler zoning. I consider that the range of provisions recognises the special qualities of the bays and their backdrop, and I recommend rejecting the submissions. And no further some evidence has been provided by the submissions on this matter. Marie, is that your paragraph on Wilson Bay?
Yes. Submissions so Wilson Bay 298 seek the removal of the ONL boundary, rather than the removing of it. the removal of the building restriction area and the extension of rural residential zoning at Wilson Bay. I'm opposed to all of these changes because of the adverse effects of the development so facilitated that the development so facilitated would have on the ONL.
Primary evidence on pages 26 and 27, I have maps for the Wilson's Bay area.
Mm.
So primary,
my
6 and 32.
Yeah. Page 26 and 27.
Sorry, which paragraph is
it? Basically, page 27 shows the areas of concern for the submitters in Wilson's Bay. then for box code, well, it's just the whole of box code. I think it's much of in terms of the current zoning, which is a combination of all those things over here.
The
area with all the old
10-acre
blocks under
the cabin. Yes, yes. Picking up from the road on each side and across the lake.
No, I have no questions.
No, I have no questions. And I don't think I have any questions.
Before we move past
Bintoe
Heights, Mr. Davis has
I oppose the Bintoe Heights submission 694 to rezone the Box Cove subzone to rural residential zone on the basis that the Box Cove subzone provisions provides better guidance on the maintenance of existing Indigenous vegetation and restoration plans.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It also requested rezoning approximately 0.34 hectares of land adjoining the Box Cove development from rural to rural residential. The land involves a land swap with the Department of Conservation for land that is zoned rural residential beside the Glenorchy Road that contains mature native trees. The land in question, that is the land in which to rezone, is subject to resource consent and reserve act processes that are ongoing. Based on the small area of the land, which has a net site area of effectively 0.24 hectares, I showed it in my primary evidence, and the recommendation of Mr. Davis that the site contains regenerating vegetation that should be protected, I have recommended that the site rezoning be rejected.
I oppose the Box Cove Developments Limited submission to rezone land in Box Cove from rural to rural residential zone on the basis that the zoning would result in the removal of a significant area of the Indigenous vegetation on the site. It would also be difficult for rural residential development at the site to meet objective 22.2.7 Box Cove Rural Residential Zone to maintain and enhance the ecological and amenity values of the Box Cove Residential Zone.
I understand where you're all coming from. I want to delve into the history of the subject because the Department of Conservation is involved, and presumably the Department has, I should know something about this, have decided they prefer the bit that would be useful. And so I'm just concerned about a potential perverse outcome here, and that the land swap wouldn't go ahead, and one can get the best outcome, of course. The land that the Department are hoping to get could well become not the rural residential. Is that a worse outcome?
It is currently zoned rural residential, yes, and privately owned.
The whole deal might fall over. Which is the preferable result?
Well, I think it's almost chicken egg. I think currently there's a resource consent for this piece of land they wish to rezone. A dwelling on land. There's a consent application. And that's not really a process. And I think it's quite an old, I think it's been going for about a year and a half. And there's also the reserves tax issue. My concern would be to rezone something before that actual process is actually occurred.
Well, my concern is that if rezoning doesn't happen, the whole deal might fall over.
I don't think that's, well, I can't say so. But my understanding from the submitter was that they hoped that this deal would be completed by the time this before this hearing.
One of these two pieces, which are both covered in indigenous bush, one of them is going to remain, is going to be rural residential and redeveloped.
The
in use of Pulsar.
Except that the pieces of land that they are wishing to have rezoned, I do struggle with actually rezoning that because of its shape and its size.
I understand.
And that there is a kind of process right now where they've applied for a resource consent and have applied for reserves. That's process to swap land.
Yeah.
And if that occurred, then the issue is resolved. Admittedly, they've got a development on rural land, but they've got their consent to develop it as they wish. So I don't see that the zoning is actually totally critical on the land swap, because it can be achieved through the resource consent and the reserves act. They will end up with a piece of land that is zoned rural.
Well, that's a general comment. It seems the more I hear about it, the more almost anything can be achieved in this district by a resource consent. And Mayor Willock.
Yeah, but I think the process is there, let's say the limit of it is assuming that this the process of consent and land swap would have been achieved before this process. This
hearing. So if they don't get the consent and they don't get the rezoning, will they go ahead and develop the other piece of land that they do have zoning over? That's why what I'm driving at.
Yes.
And would that be a worse outcome?
Yes, that would be a worse outcome.
Thank you, Mr. Davis.
That's what I've been trying to get at.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, that block that the Department of Conservation wants is a better piece of bush.
Yes, it is. From my perspective, whilst that may be the case, there's still indigenous vegetation on that, on the new parcel of land. In my view, that should be assessed properly through a consent application.
Yeah.
If we were to run that rural residential, I think those ability to assess the vegetation, the values that are there, is undermined.
Can I just add one more comment in terms of, there could be a perverse outcome in that if the land was rezoned, but the land swap didn't go ahead for whatever reason, then there's two pieces of land. You've got a piece of land zone, rural residential, I suppose it's going to be owned by Doc.
But nobody submitted against that piece of zoning, so it stays. That piece of land that's already zoned is a given.
Is the piece of land that's already zoned developable for rural residential purposes?
It does have quite a large building restriction area over it. I'm not sure whether there is.
I think
it's in the submission too.
It's on map 38. It's not the maps at such a large scale are probably really helpful.
There's a small triangle of land, I think it's 2 hectares or so. I'm not sure how developable all that land is. It's got a bit of a restriction area over, I think, about 2/3 of it. I would say at least 2/3 of the site has a building restriction area over it. So with that, I'm not sure how developable all that land is. It is an error in terms of zoning that. I think the owner of the submission had made that point on the evidence that they consider it was an error. The piece of land was sank. They don't want it well. I'm not sure how, I'm not sure how developed it is with the restrictions it has on it. The part that isn't within the building restriction areas actually would be right beside the road. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how much what the vegetation is like.
The highway,
thanks.
You said the road,
the highway. The highway, yes. Because Davis is looking at that step.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically covered in the pictures. So.
I suppose the other question is, well, Mr. Mander is only peripherally involved in this one. Do you have any knowledge of whether the council has made any effort to regularise the legal road aligning to the actual road in this area, Mr. Mander?
I don't, from my time at council, this wasn't a high priority. They're certainly not alone in the district on roads that veer off the legal, but I'm not aware of any of our efforts to legalise, to bring that road into the legal road.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Two pieces of land, they both have indigenous vegetation, which Mr. Davis values, and there are consequences.
So moving to the submission by Christian Birch and Carrie Large and Mark Scape. This is my paragraph 9 of the same. In response to submissions from Sam Birch, Landscape, and Matt Cowrie Lodge Limited, I have recommended that the PDP visitor accommodation subzone at Matt Cowrie Lodge be retained. Property considers that the site can absorb the additional development that the subzone provides. Ms. Birch's request to remove all of the visitor subzone visitor accommodation subzone from the rural lifestyle and rural residential zones would also affect Cedar Lodge at Makarura, which is considered in Sperry Street 12, and Speargrass Lodge at Speargrass Road in the Wakatipi Basin to be considered in the Wakatipi Basin area. No further evidence has been provided by the submitters, although it is noted that they have presented evidence in hearing paper 2.
Based on the further submitter. The Speargrass Lodge, is that a recent phenomenon?
No, it's historic, it's actually burnt down.
And yes,
it's been recently subdivided, so I think.
I think we can just count that one.
I think so.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, I have to say, I looked at that when we did the spring too.
And
yes, because that did affect that as well.
Yes, so that's one where you'd ask why the zoning is there. That's correct.
Yeah.
But it must be checked that. Mrs. Birch's submission has also been allocated to the Wakatipi Basin hearing so that matter can be addressed, unless it's going to be addressed through hearing 2. Regarding the zoning and the zoning of Speargrass Lodge.
Yes. My view is that at hearing 2 we had all needed to hear on the matter because we heard from all the parties, and the application of the zoning on the maps was also considered at that time. So I discussed this with Ms. Scott yesterday. I'm not sure that we need to make another decision on the same thing, other than being consistent.
Okay, so we move to the submissions around Kingston Township.
Was there any landscape commentary on that?
In terms of the list here, like we'll talk about the Lifestyle Family Trust first, which is my paragraph 10.
Right.
And then I've grouped together the other two submissions, which are, so the Lifestyle Trust is based around just adjoining the Kingston Township, and the other two submissions are across the state highway or field up nearby. So in response to the submission from Kingston Lifestyle Family Trust to rezone their land that lies between the Kingston Township Zone, Kingston Village Special Zone and the State Highway from rural to residential zone, I've recommended that the submission be rejected, but note that if traffic effects on the existing intersection of the State Highway can be addressed, then there is merit in rezoning the site as a Kingston Township when that zone is reviewed at a later stage. No evidence on traffic effects have been provided by the submission.
Does it actually need to? Oh, so it's the existing intersections into Kingston that you're concerned about.
That's a concern. Not,
yeah, and obviously Mr. Mandate is not in the agreement.
Yes. So that was a concern of Mr. Mandate in terms of the additional traffic on that intersection.
Right.
But it's not been addressed by
the NZTA also went around. Do you want the council to look out to the highway?
Yes, there's a lot of solutions. So this is one that gets caught by the stage of the review.
Yes. I understand that.
That's that block of means.
We walked.
We walked into
the area. Yeah, almost.
And it adjoins the campground.
Yes,
in Kingston. And the railway line is the other boundary, the southern boundary.
I mean, it is sort of logical, isn't it? The traffic is probably going to be overcome. Was it? So you're going to talk to us about the traffic?
The point I make in waivers is that there's been no information provided on the traffic effects. So if they could provide those,
some
confidence that they could address that concerns.
I have
a question. Yes. Mr. Mander, the yield from Kingston Township Zone or the yield from some conventional residential lot, low density or something, would they be a similar number of lots?
So
yes.
The
You and Mr. Buxton between you must have worked out how many lots would be generated by subdividing for residential purposes or for Kingston Township. And then I wanted to ask him, the traffic generated, is it different? And what difference would that make at the intersection of the State Highway? Because I'm sorry, I'm a little printer. You know, I have an idea about traffic.
They were asking for three different types of zones.
Yeah.
Two of them are from the proposed plan, but the one that seemed the most logical was the one adjoining their site, which is the Kingston Township, which is part of the Stage 2 review. Also, the Kingston Township, the density for those sites is 800 square metres.
So it's
the other zones they're asking for was slightly less.
Yes.
And at that point in time, writing the evidence, I did check with teleinfrastructure people. They said 800 square metres would be a better site if services are to be provided within on each individual site for a separate tank. That's things that might change.
800 square metres for a separate tank. 800 square
metres. Seems small, doesn't it?
Well, that would be the minimum, I think.
Oh, it's space.
Yes, no, that's what that's currently what is occurring in Kingston.
So the Kingston Township Zone is 1,800 square metres. All the zones that they were asking for would have yielded a lot more than that, except that servicing is a constraint.
I do actually notice that at 800 square metres per site, the capacity would be approximately 32 dwellings.
Uh-huh. And then I guess to you, Mr. Langdon, would the traffic from 32 dwellings make a significant difference at that main state highway intersection?
It possibly wouldn't. The issue for me is that the traffic hasn't been considered, and so it hasn't come forward.
Thank you.
That's not a particularly busy road. About 4,000 a day or something?
In that order.
And from recollection, the visibility is good. Is that correct?
Yes, the visibility is good.
What more would you expect?
What I would expect is an understanding of what's already been considered and what this will add to that. So I would see it as a reasonably simple exercise for a traffic engineer to present a paragraph or two to say this is the likely effect, this is what's happened in terms of that intersection, and that therefore you have the confidence to this one. But what I don't see is that information.
Yeah, would you expect that on a rezoning or the application for such a right?
I think I'd be comfortable with the application on this scale if it came with the application to subdivide.
Right.
So what would it be? Would it be a restricted discretionary activity?
That the council would recommend a restricted discretionary for subdivision, yes.
So if we rezone it and we come in as a restricted discretionary, with traffic being one of those.
Yes.
That is a good call.
Mm. That's been really good. Thank you.
Yeah.
And that would satisfy the concern. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, there was a matter you raised earlier about the plan change and the original plan to do with the nitrogen and the catchment. Is this relevant in
urban
areas?
That's the next question.
Oh, okay.
Because septic tanks don't do anything to mitigate nitrogen requirements at all, and individuals can't even afford the sort of treatment required to recover. And 15 kilos even, to be frank, even someone fertilising their lawn would exceed the 15 kilos per hectare per year. Mm. Mm. I've done the calculation at my place, and it does. So the septic tank is probably going to exceed that limit. And that's something I don't know that the council has considered it. I don't think he looked at it in terms of the nitrogen effects. I did look at it in terms of infrastructure, I think.
Treatment systems to the regional council.
Well, that's
status.
Yes, well, that may impact on the if that was then added, we may not get that yield.
What was that again?
The advanced treatment system.
They would need regional council consent as well.
No, they'd have to meet the requirements of the regional plan and need sort of an advance to meet that requirement.
A package of treatment for the
or
individual.
Individual. I think he was looking at it that time because the Kingston Township, I'm understanding, is all individual treatment systems. And that they need advanced treatment systems, each if they're actually individually. Or if it's a subdivision, there is the opportunity to put in a combined.
Mm. So I see that Mr. Glasgow goes on to say that they are looking for a community treatment system in that Kingston.
I don't think that was part of the local community plan. I think the water supply was part of the planning for that area as a service thing, but not the. I don't think there's any definite program for the wastewater treatment.
It was Kingston and Christopher,
It has already been.
So what's the implication of that?
Well, I think it might mean they can bring that system forward in terms of anything still providing reticulated.
Well, Mr. Dazzle's not clear, but do you have an understanding about what the council's application for Kingston was?
It's only what I've read in the paper, I can't recall. I remember it was one of the three areas that was identified for the grant, for the loan.
Yes. Well, presumably there must be a special aspect of that as to what land they thought we're going to get out of it.
I think that might be helpful if we dealt with on the fly to clarify that for us. And Mr. Place's comments about the advanced treatment systems and the practicality of that on individual sites would be useful. If you sort of, one of those things that just we don't want that going into detail on.
So Mr. Buxton's summary, he addresses submissions by Wilson 848 and Tim Taylor together. So he'll read that paragraph and then I'll ask Dr. Reed to give her a summary on the Wilson submission.
So in response to the submissions from Wilson and Taylor to rezone land on the opposite side of the State Highway to large lot residential or to residential slash commercial zoning, I've recommended that the submissions be rejected. The requested large lot residential zone is not appropriate for a zone that is a 20 hectare block located away from the Kingston Township. Mm-hmm. That's the large lot residential is an urban zone.
Mm-hmm.
And the requested residential commercial zone for the block directly across the road would have split the township around the state highway. The submissions provide little detail and no evidence has been provided by the submitters.
Submission 848 requests the rezoning of an area of land from rural to large lot residential. I'm opposed to this as a site isolated from other urban style development, and its development for residential use would have an adverse effect on the ONL. Create a situation that might be one thing would be. And submission 826 requests the zoning of an area of land on the Kingston Highway for residential and commercial activity. Now I'm opposed to this rezoning as I consider it would sprawl the Kingston urban development out of the land scenes which are currently contained.
Remind me where the ONL was in that vicinity?
Everything.
Everything's ONL, it's all ONL.
Mm-hmm.
I'll
remember this one. Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Mr. Buxton, all that capacity enablement, it includes rural capacity and the capacity of places like Kingston, all that population?
I didn't vote in terms of Kingston Township.
Will we be The calculations themselves formed in this model, I think, are based on the what he called the Queenstown ward, which included the rural areas as well. So, just wondering.
I don't suppose there's any more
need, is where I'm going, to enable development. But I just wondered if you'd considered that. No.
Okay. On page 3 of the summary, it's up Kingston Village.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. But also just in general, for all of these rural ones, whether or not they're part of whether Mr. Buxton considered the effect on enablement.
So submissions void, number 328, and okay, all three of them.
Paragraph 12, in response to the submissions by Bruce and Boyd and also Kripke, requesting rezoning the land from rural to rural with specific provisions to increase residential density, I have recommended that the submissions be rejected on the basis that the request will create spot zones. No evidence has been provided by Mrs. Kripke. While evidence has been provided by the submitters, Goetz and Boyd, I consider the site is not sufficiently unique to warrant consideration of the spot zone. Probable hazards on the site need to be addressed before considering rezoning.
Regarding submission 828, which was Gutsaw's and Boyd, I consider that it could be appropriately rezoned for lifestyle, providing the density remains at the level contained in the right of the version of Chapter 22 of the PDP, which is minimum 1 hectare, average of 2. And with regard to submission 431 at Y Creek, I do consider the site can absorb some development, but I'm opposed to it being done through rezoning. Resource consent is more appropriate way of understanding development on that site.
Any questions for you? It's a paragraph 8.2, and then you referred to the preservation of the margins of the river in section 6 in your rebuttal evidence, page 19. Consider the court's interpretation of margins, especially the more recent one from the Wanaka Water Sports hearing.
The way I look at it is we've got there's a river of water conservation order adjoining land that's classified as ONL. And that there should be an integrated approach to assessing that piece of land. That would be my, that's my response to that, and to try and demarcate those two. It should be looked as a whole. If there's protection on the river, there's protection on the land in terms of character. To rezone the plateau of a peninsula above the meander of the Kawarau River from Gibson Character Zone to a rural zone, and our rural zone to rural lifestyle zone, is recommended to be rejected. In my view, the proposed zone could potentially double the residential development that has been consented under the Gibson Character Zone. It would remove some of the more productive land and would erode the distinctive character of the Gibson Valley. The submission provided little detail, and no evidence has been provided by the submitter. So this is my confidence summary.
Mr. Buxton, this is the right time to ask a question that I'd like to understand about the way farming operate in this district, because the terraces are always the good land, and every farm seems to have some of them, plus lots of high country. And it's also the most versatile land for other uses. And there appears to be a number of submissions which seek to change the zonings of those for different purposes. Has the council taken a strategic approach to considering how, or what has the council done to think about, at a strategic level, the evolution of one activity, pastoral grazing, into other future activities, which in the Wapitiwi Basin appear to be oriented to tourism. But, I look at Waituri and I thought, I don't even see this as being part of the Gibson Valley character. It looked to me to be an orphan site, way out of everything else. And then I started thinking, so what do people do? If you take the terrace out, what effect does it have on the farming operation?
And when this was about the extra traffic on the roads.
Mr. Mallard's got questions about that. I've just got a more general question about all these submissions.
Well, I said the plan focuses the rural zone on farming. There is a focus on farming. And I think the word is used as diversification of that land is something that should be considered at a scale that's appropriate. Mm-hmm. And farming, and to me, I see this, that farming can still be retained, mm-hmm. and some diversification may occur. Mm-hmm. And it is a conflict in terms of that is the land that's most easily diversified. Mm-hmm. Yet it's the land that is most productive. So there is a real conflict here. Those two opposing activities. But I see the rural zone is focusing on providing farming. And that farming has not only does it provide the economic benefit, but it also provides the landscape benefit.
On Lot Lini, is that how you say it? Lot Lini is it? They overwinter their stock, so they graze their stock all year round. Terraces aren't needed for cropping or anything else like that. Some of the others were using, from our site visits, it would appear those terraces were used both for grazing and overwintering, but also were growing food and things. Lot Lini said they don't, they just make do with what they've got. And it was a puzzle to me how the plan is approaching the enablement of land use change in the district when for these large properties.
And although the terraces and such are the most likely for diversification, I think planners focus in diversification away in areas that I mean, that you're looking at the objectives, but it's the scale and size that will fit with the landscape provisions of the rural area as well. And so I see the plan is directing diversification into areas that are less obvious or can be discrete or for design to be more hidden, tucked away. Once someone's used the word. And so those fans, they would be they're the most productive part of the farm. The farm has the emphasis on the rural zone. And so as well, diversification is something that should be focused on those most productive areas that are typically the most visible as well.
In the case of Waitiri, most productive area, isn't it? Work on the terraces are well above the valley. There is another elevation, and when you're on the road, you can't see them.
No. But they're the flatter land in terms of productivity, and the consent that we currently have was for Virginia.
Mm.
I don't know the full extent of Waitiri, but what river flats they had lower down. But just my glance at the aerial photography, that seemed to be the flat and more versatile than available. That plateau, which is where they were wishing to rezone.
Yeah. And it's another one of those cases of latent potential, because they have a consent, don't they?
They do have a consent. Based around a vineyard on the plateau, the housing around them.
And it expires in September or something, so they don't think they're rushing to do it.
No. And I wonder how viable the vineyard is.
Well, I'm pretty sure it wouldn't be far from up there. And that's really where I got round to. So is it really part of the Gibson Valley character design?
It is.
Well, it may be, isn't it? But does it meet the criteria for inclusion if we were doing a fresh look?
Should it be there, yeah.
Maybe Dr. Reed can help on this, but I don't know whether there's views coming from the Queenstown or the Gibson Valley of that plateau.
No. There is some of their land actually on the Queenstown side, there is actually a river flat which you can see, but it's totally undeveloped, it's a track now, it's just grazed up.
And it'll be on the south side, it won't be shaded. If it's under Gibson Valley,
that is the north of the top, but they're on the western side.
Yes.
Pretty much the dark green bit adjacent to the river is what you're stationing
on. On the south side of the river.
On the south side of the river, the north side of the road.
Yes, in fact, that is flat and on the terrace is in the bit that is only rural. Immediately across the river from the east of the Gibson Valley. Mm. So that would be the south bank, south side. Mm. Is that the
Well, I'm not sure whether we've reached the conclusion or not, because if I was musing rather than asking incisive questions, but I got to puzzling about things when we saw Waitiri as to how things were zoned and why. And,
well, to where, to what extent the objectives and policies of the plan support farming, viable farming. To what extent the rural plan objectives and policies, or even strategic ones, talk about the importance of farming, protecting the viability of
It's not an unusual site. Well, that's referred to the first sentence of the purpose is to enable farming activities.
Enable it, but preserve it. Enable it, fine, but preserve it.
Yes.
Protect it or preserve it. Enabling is one thing, but if people choose not to be enabled, they don't.
Righteous.
Yeah.
It does talk about the life support, the life supporting capacity of soil to sustain its farming.
That's why the rural residential probably sustains it too, isn't it? No.
Residential, that's
too heavy. You won't get economic units out of rural residential, but it isn't actually doing anything particular to the soil.
You've reduced the capacity in terms of you've created residential development on that land.
Well, you have two buildings and your house stand and so on. You know, in proportion to the amount of land in the district, that must be minimal. But no, you're not telling me that the council is particularly out to protect and preserve farming per se through the district plan.
No, it doesn't say.
Encouraging it in an action, but no more than that. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
I just wanted to ask, the effect on landscape character, not on visual. Right. And the character, that's right.
I didn't want to ask Mr. Amanda if you're familiar with this site. When I went there, I was very concerned about visibility at the entrance in one direction. It seemed to come out, not quite on a bend, but quite close to it. Would that be one of your concerns?
That would be a concern about because it is 100 kilometres
from
the speed environment.
It's quite a decent sideline down towards Roy Megan, but the other end, towards the Queenstown end, it seems very, very delicious and little. You could do it better, couldn't you?
Yes, I think through you, Mr. Chair, the NZTA have in the past tried to do safety works on that stretch of pipeline, and it is very constrained in terms of the bank and the of the river.
It is, though, something that could be investigated further in consent application
stage. Seemed to me that there were vertical alignment problems through there, and would they be able to be solved easily?
I would say no, on the basis that there has been a crash history in that area, unrelated to access to the property that remained. So it is very expensive to widen to deal with vertical alignment and those issues.
It's presumably pretty much on rock. Mm.
Mr. Chair, I have one last question to Mr. Mayor, so I knew we'd get to this. The property access, could it be relocated to make it safer?
I visited that site a couple of years ago on an unrelated matter, and the impression that I got was that it would be very difficult to provide alternative accesses, such as the nature of that road, but the landowner may be able to say this particular detail that you could do something here. So, to the best of my knowledge, I'd say no, but it's something that the landowner, property owner, may.
Seems odd that it wasn't investigated at the time of the previous one.
Yes. And that may suggest that these may not be on.
Okay, let's move on to the Western Valley Station Commission.
Paragraph 14. The request by Western Station Valley Limited to introduce a subzone is recommended to be rejected as a proposed zone could significantly increase the visitor, residential and commercial development that has been consented under the Gibson character zone and would erode the distinctive character of the Gibson Valley, which is rural and based around viticulture. The submission provided little detail and was amended by evidence provided by the submitter. The evidence included a structure plan and updated provisions, but it was still unclear in terms of what the subzone will provide for. For example, it was not certain what level of development would result from the overall subzone site coverage of 10%. And how this may be spread between activity areas. In addition, I do not agree with the evidence from the submitter that the consented development shows that the area can accommodate a significant increase in development without affecting the character of the Gibson character zone. On the 19th of July, the submitter provided a revised structure plan and revised provisions. It appears, based on this material, the new submissions for the submitter, that the significant changes to the structure plan are activity area AA2 has been reduced in size and has been pulled back from the Kawerau River. Activity area AA3 has significantly increased in size.
You say slightly.
A slight increase in size, so including what was A7 and has been split into two. Activity area AA4, the Vintners Village, AA5, AA6 and AA8 have been reduced in size. The visitor accommodation is to be located in AA1 and AA2, residential activity in AA3, AA5, AA6, and workers' accommodation in AA8. Paragraph 43 of the Gibson Valley legal submission refers to rectifying the error of including rural zone land within the subzone. However, the structure plan still shows the boundary of the subzone to include rural zone, as shown in figure 1 of my rebuttal evidence. The Gibson Valley legal submission states that my estimates of site coverage are overstated by an enormous amount. I note that the structure plan includes a table showing building coverage that identifies a total building coverage for the subzone of 5%. Although this appears to be based on the subzone extending over the rural zone, and if the subzone area was reduced, as noted above, the percentage would increase slightly. However, I consider that assessing the intensity of development over the whole subzone does not give a useful indication of what the level of development would be within the activity areas. My estimate of 33% site coverage, referred to in my rebuttal evidence, was based on the potential development that was 10% of the subzone area, which I estimated to be 108 hectares, divided by the total area of the activity areas, which I estimated to be 32 hectares. That's prior to them being reduced with this latest information. Using the areas from the structure plan table, which is based on a more restrictive potential development regime compared to the previous version of the subzone, if the total building cluster coverage of 6.32 hectares is divided by the total area of A1 to 6 and A8, that's 26.13 hectares, the average coverage within the activity areas is 24%. I consider this level of development to be approaching an urbanised scale in areas AA1, AA5, AA6, being 30%, 28% and 39% respectively, at an urbanised level of development, which I consider would erode the distinctive character of the Gibson Valley. Paragraph 29 of the Gibson Valley legal submissions refers to a landscape control based on the 380 metre contour. This control does not appear to be in the rules, and such a rule would restrict development in area AA8 to approximately the lower 25% of the area, which may have the effect of increasing the density by a factor of 4, i.e. the 12% building coverage notated on the structure plan would become approximately 48%. Paragraph 41 of the legal submission states that my reference to the 2008 resource consent evidence is inappropriate. I have referred to that evidence for two reasons. Firstly, the primary submission states that in granting resource consent, RM08064 and other consents, the council has assessed the property in relation to its potential to absorb a high level of residential, commercial, cultural, and commercial recreational activity and found it can cater for change without significantly impacting on the landscape and the environment. Secondly, evidence provided by the submitter included the natural hazards report for that. I therefore consider that it is appropriate for me to refer to evidence presented at the resource consent hearing that identified conflicting statements in the natural hazards report. This is one of the reasons why I consider the submitter should be providing an updated report on the natural hazards of the site. Paragraph 32 of the legal submissions states that the activity areas have been aligned more closely to the 2008 resource consent in terms of what will be provided for. The figures for visitor accommodation and residential units referred to in that paragraph do not appear to match the figures used by Mr. Carr in his paragraph 31, the submitter's traffic expert. I also note that the amended provisions also result in a significant increase in residential development and decrease in visitor accommodation, which does not appear to align with the 2008 resource consent. Given that resource consent decision noted at paragraph 130 that high density permanent housing was not anticipated. Overall, I consider that the changes proposed to the subzone, including the move away from visitor accommodation to residential activity within further erodes the Gibson character zone, which is based around viticulture within a rural environment.
My interpretation through the recent cold and the Blitzkrieg time pressure suggests that the most recently submitted amended application, the structure plan and amended plan provisions do effectively reduce the scope of the development within the proposed zone, something similar to the consented development. And consequently, I consider my reservations effectively addressed overall, in my opinion, of the submission is now from a landscape perspective, the relief could be provided.
Or could some devastation as well as further traffic analysis would just be helpful in explaining how traffic may increase the development. Mr. Carr's evidence also indicates the existing high crash rate on the state highway and the vicinity of the site, a factor that may impact on the design and use of available assistance. Being at a zoning stage, I appreciate that there's some uncertainty as to the traffic generated by the eventual development and where access to the state highway will be obtained. Although the state highway alongside the submitted land is a limited access road, the agency does not have control over the use of Rester Road at the eastern end of the land affected by the rezoning proposal. In this instance, my concerns would be allayed by notification of the NZ Transport Agency of any consent application affecting the site, therefore giving it the opportunity to submit. In addition, I consider that the council should have the ability to impose traffic and transportation conditions on any consents that are granted.
The Gibson Valley Station Limited submission 827 requested a rezoning of land from rural to Gibson Valley subzone. I oppose the proposed Gibson Valley subzone based on my understanding of the ecological values of the subject area and the lack of information regarding the types of activities that could occur within the subzone. Ms. Nikki Sneckham filed landscape planning evidence on behalf of Gibson Valley Station and presented a structure plan that sets out the activities that are proposed within the subzone. The important ecological values identified during investigations completed to support resource consent RM08064 are located within the balance area of the structure plan. At paragraph 50 of Ms. Sneathan's evidence, she states, the balance areas of the SZ will remain as unimproved tussock grassland pasture or grey shrubland. These areas convey a more natural character and typically contain higher ecological values than the productive areas and activity areas within the G previous subzone. Based on the exclusion of the areas within higher ecological values from the development areas within the subzone, I no longer oppose the proposed Gibson Valley subzone from an ecological perspective.
As I anticipate having several questions on this, I think I'd like to do this first.